8.
Welcome to Books and Beyond with your host, Alison. Join us for half an hour of information, entertainment, reading recommendations, and beyond. Brought to you by Auckland Libraries.
I know this girl, and she works in a library.
Nō mai, haere mai, kia ora, and welcome to Books and Beyond with Alison and Inika. Look, we've got a really special guest in the studio today, the writer, filmmaker and Fulbright scholar, Ghazale Golbakhsh. Kia ora, Ghazale.
Kia ora, thank you for having me.
It's so good to have you here. Ghazale's just released a book of essays, and it's called The Girl from Revolution Road. It's published by Allen and Unwin. And I just want to say congratulations. It's such a beautiful book. The cover is so eye-catching, isn't it? I must admit, I was walking down Ponsonby Road, and I saw it in through the window of the women's bookshop. And it really, you know, it just really jumps out at you.
Thank you. Yeah, it was great fun because I worked with the freelance graphic designer through Ellen Unwin, and we gave her some ideas, and she just came back immediately with this one, and everyone loved it. And I even had to check with the flatmates because you just never know if it's just you.
Yeah.
But I loved it, and I was glad I didn't have to put myself on the cover. But yeah, I wanted something kind of. Not abstract, but, you know, with that kind of, like, you make your own meaning with it, I guess. And something that stands out, like you said, the colours and everything,
It really does. It's so important as well when we're, you know, advertising online to have that big graphic look as soon as you get it.
Yeah, absolutely. I really judge books by the cover sometimes, I'll be honest.
We all do.
We do, even as librarians, we do, don't we? They say not to, but you do. So now, in the book, you write about your early childhood in Iran in the late, or in the 1980s, sorry, just after the revolution and during the war with Iraq. And what a turbulent and frightening time it would have been. And in one of the essays, which I found so powerful, you recount the story of your parents being arrested at what really seemed like a pretty innocent gathering party, but it was with men and women, and there was a bit of alcohol involved, wasn't there, and dancing. But the shocking scenes that you describe where your dad and your uncle and some of the women involved, I think, were punished quite brutally for that. So that must have been awful. Yeah.
I mean, it's a shocking story, and so basically, at that time, it was just at the turn of the regime change, so it was the most restrictive time, and then you had the war on top of that. So it was it was illegal to have, obviously, alcohol because it was an Islamic republic, but also really arbitrary rules like men and women couldn't mix. So people would find, but people always find ways. So you know, you would have underground parties, and this was one such case. They even went out of town a little bit, like say you would go to Hamilton to get out of the big city, because the other issue is sometimes you don't know who your neighbours are, someone might rate you out, and that's I think part of the challenges. And unfortunately, someone did rat them out, but they're all a bunch of, you know, people in their late 20s. I was there as a kid, my baby sister was there, there was like older people, like grandparents, so it was more like a family gathering. It wasn't like an intense rave or something. Not to say that's bad, but so I think that adds to the shock. And someone ratted them out to the authorities, and they came and they were arrested as a result. And what is shocking, and it shouldn't be, but it is, that they still have today, they have certain punishments that go back to, you know, 6th, 7th century. It's very barbaric, and it was a way to deter future criminal, in quotation marks, activity. And I think that's the initial staying behind it, and I guess it works in some ways. You know, they still, you know, Iran is, has one of the highest rates of executions to this day, behind, I think, China, it's probably.
Right.
And yeah, it's just, it's very barbaric, but then people will always adapt and find a way and fight it in their own ways. And that's kind of what I wanted to show.
Absolutely.
Yes.
I think you did. I mean, that's the case, isn't it? Life wants to happen.
Yes.
Regardless, and we want to be social and, yeah, and the risk is kind of worth it in so many ways. Though the risk is so high, of course.
Exactly. But I think even, I mean, not to compare it completely, but even during lockdown and what we're all going through this year, it's just amazing how quickly people adapt and find ways to deal with it. And in some small way, I think that's what my parents and their friends kind of had to do. You find a way to adapt. Obviously challenge it because it's a bit more complex than lockdown. But yeah, and I guess for them it was just part of the norm and a thing to deal with and challenge and still enjoy life when you can, I guess.
Absolutely.
It's human nature, isn't it? And so sometime after this, so it's about the mid-1980s, I think many Iranians were leaving their country, and you came to New Zealand with your family, and you were 6 years old.
Yes.
I seem to remember from the book. And your parents were skilled migrants, so they were able to get working visas. But, do you know, they must have wondered what had hit them when they arrived in New Zealand in the mid-80s, at the bottom of the world. And it must have just been such a shock for them.
I think it was, especially for them, because they come from Tehran, which is the capital city.
Yes, and it's a big city.
It's a big
country.
And just little things that you wouldn't think about, I think, really shocked my parents. You know, apart from the visual look of the place, you know, we didn't really have apartments back then, and everything shuts on a Sunday. my mum actually remembers how, you know, how casual everyone was, just in their dress, you know. Both her and my dad would show up to work in a suit. My mum was wearing, like, full-on makeup, got her hair done, and then she realised, oh, no, that's not what people do here. And she was just like, where are we? What is happening? But, again, like, it's been now 30 years, and they're both definitely taken on some Kiwi cultural things, and you know, my mum loves nothing more than walking on the beach and having her flat white.
So I guess once again you adapt somehow, don't you?
Exactly.
Yes. Yeah.
And it's a lot easier for some than others. Like, I wanted to point out that we, you know, we came as migrants on a tourist visa, but we did have a lot of friends who at the time had to come through as refugees or asylum seekers. So it's not always the same for everyone.
Different experiences.
Exactly.
And you started straight in at school in your local primary, and you let us know in the book a little bit about the challenges of that, trying to cope with, you know, going to school in a Kiwi landscape, new language, new customs, new ways of learning.
Yeah, it's funny you don't think about language and how important that is, but I literally didn't know any English except hello and 1, 2, 3, which is ironic because I hate maths. But going to school, I mean, it was good because I was so young so I could learn quickly, but it was also really hard because at that time I don't think many people were used to people who didn't speak English or from certain countries. And so in my case, a lot of the other students actually helped me, but it was one teacher in particular, and even through high school there was another teacher who were not so nice about it, and that was quite shocking, and I'm hoping that's not the case anymore.
We really hope.
And again, that was just one experience. Not, I'm sure some other people have perfectly good ones, but
We were talking about it a little bit earlier, weren't we, Alison, and saying, you know, it's amazing how long that sort of attitude can persist. My own grandparents came here in the early 50s from Holland, and the kids only spoke Dutch when they went to school, and, you know, got slaps on the wrist from the nuns for speaking Dutch in the classroom. And then, you know, finding, okay, probably the ruler was not around in the 80s, I hope.
No, thank God.
But still finding that sort of same attitude about, you know, how we should be in New Zealand.
And then one part that really touched my heart, and I felt so sad, a seemingly perhaps innocent or exercise that you were asked to do, which was to do your family tree. And it was just heartbreaking in that, so all the kids came back to school with their Scottish and English and Irish roots, and that how you wished that maybe you could have some of those as well. And do you know, that really made me stop and think. I just sat there and I thought, I wonder in my own work in the library, am I doing anything that's actually excluding, really exclusionary like that? And I think we can all learn. It sort of makes you reflect back on your own actions or practice.
Yeah, that's really interesting
story.
Point. Yeah.
Yeah.
Actually, so what I did later, like even just this year, I sent off for that ancestry DNA test.
Oh, yes.
And obviously I knew it'd be Iranian, like the majority of the percentage would be Iranian, but it was shocking to get back 100% Iranian, which was funny because my mum, so the story went, I came home, I was really upset that I didn't have a quarter Irish, quarter Scottish, and I would ask my mum, you know, how much are we? She's like, we're not, we're just Persian. And I was like, no, but that can't be it. Oh. She's like, no, it is. I'm like, but way back, didn't we have like Irish and Scottish? She's like, no, we're one of the oldest civilizations in the world. I'm like, that's not good enough. And then so when I did this ancestry test and I sent it back to her, she just replied with, yeah, I told you. But just recently, actually, a month ago, I got an update and they said, oh, we also found that you have a bit of Turkish. So I think it's I know part of the reason must be that they just need more data from those areas.
Oh, yes.
So I assume that's part of it, and that's why it's interesting. It's like, yes, if we can kind of expand our research into these kind of areas too. So if you know, a friend did the same test and she's from Gujarat in India, but they gave her like very specific areas of India that she was from. So I think that's part of the problem.
Oh, I see.
The data they have to pull from.
Yeah.
I think so.
And it's good that they update you too, isn't it? Because I know those tests are expensive, so it's good that you get sort of follow-up customer care.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes. And you talk now, or in the book, it almost felt a bit like a transition that you firstly were talking about living in between worlds and then, you know, so where you felt not quite Iranian and then not quite Kiwi, whatever Kiwi is, of course, and then it morphs into sort of being a hyphenated Iranian New Zealander. And then later in the book you talk about this concept of a symbiotic relationship where your Iranian and your Kiwi strands are sort of woven together. I really liked that. And it made me think about, like, the DNA helix.
Yeah. I actually took that from Rose Lu's book.
Oh, that's right.
Those Who Live on Islands. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. And that's exactly the image I had when I read that sentence. So this DNA kind of woven together, and just the idea of two things growing together but in harmony, which I thought was a really nice visual.
Yes.
I think you did a beautiful job in the book of balancing so many different aspects of your own identity and of your family's identity. You know, we have the stories in the book of Iran and your family's experiences in Iran, your and your family's experiences here in New Zealand. And then we get these kind of almost quintessentially Kiwi stories about meeting Prince William in the club. Loved that story a lot.
Great.
Yeah, I think you're really deft about balancing all the different aspects of your life and how being Iranian New Zealand has enriched your life and because I think there probably are, we were talking a little bit about how I think there's a massive appetite in New Zealand, a rising appetite for hearing different New Zealand stories. And I think you really nailed it.
Oh, thank you very much. Thank you.
And it enriches your experiences and stories enriches, I think, our whole conversation and our whole experience, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And what's been nice is, you know, originally when I wrote it, I thought I'd be writing it for people like myself who are third culture kids or grew up as with immigrant parents. But actually a lot of my friends have given the book to their parents to read, which I did not expect. So that's been quite nice that, you know, the parents who are probably people who are going into retirement now would be interested in these kind of stories. So that was really nice to hear that.
Yeah. Oh, that's so good, isn't it? Yeah. Because I know that it was sort of it's excruciating, and I felt so sad too that when people would ask you things at school like, where are you from? And then, no, but where are you really?
Yeah,
well, I still get that. Oh, do you? Yeah. There's a couple of kids in my class all through school that used to get that as well.
Mm.
And I mean, that's a long, long time ago. But, yeah, that's something that I don't know that people learn that it's kind of not okay.
I think it depends on the context. I don't mind it so much because some people are just curious, and I even am sometimes. It's just dependent on what the context is or what their reasons for it.
Yeah.
And I know some people hate it fully. They will refuse to answer that. But for me, I think maybe it's just curiosity about it. And you know, it's all dependent on what their response is then.
Yeah.
It's true. The next
question.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
No, that's true, actually. There's nuances, aren't there?
Yeah, absolutely.
It. Yeah. We loved reading about how you adapted some of the Iranian customs to the Kiwi reality. And the one about, is it at the last Wednesday? It's in spring, isn't it? The last Wednesday before Nowruz, is it?
How yes, Nowruz.
Nowruz,
yeah,
sorry.
So it's,
and people traditionally jump over three fires.
So it's called Chorsham Basuri, which is the Wednesday before, and it has origins in Zoroastrianism
as
well.
That's right.
And then obviously it's because that's the whole thing with Iran today. It's just a lot of areas are blending in, you know, old traditions with Islamic traditions. And so Nowruz was again originated with Zoroastrianism, but also just ancient Persian traditions. And so this was one of the traditions that kind of has stayed alive because people just enjoy it, and it's this idea of jumping over fire to get rid of ills or negativity that you collected over the year. And that the fire, and obviously the fire being a huge symbol of Zoroastrianism, kind of helps take that away.
Right. Really
nice.
We need a bit of that this year, don't we?
Yeah, we do.
We need a bonfire.
Yeah, we do.
Really bonfire. Jump high.
Yeah. But I loved how you would adapted it, and so do you jump over your phone, you know, the app on your phone.
Yeah, because you can't have open fires, we learned, in the backyard. Yeah.
Yes, oh dear.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then you talk about microaggressions and then the flat-out race, you know, full-on racism experienced in New Zealand. And yet, you know, I think we New Zealanders, and I put myself in this category too, to my shame, that we sort of delude ourselves into thinking that we value equality above all else. And then, of course, 15th of March happened. And, you know, I have to be honest here, and I was so naive because I thought it could never happen here. But, you know, I think people were sort of blissfully ignorant or willfully ignorant. And we've really had to face some hard truths, haven't we?
Yeah, absolutely. And I don't think it's just New Zealand and New Zealanders. You know, you see what's happening in the US, for example. People are still shocked about that, and that's even more surprising considering their history, their recent history, I should say.
Yeah.
And in saying that, we also have our own dark history that's still happening with, you know, with the way that tangata whenua has been treated. So I think it shouldn't be shocking, but I think the act was so shocking that we couldn't relate to it. We couldn't just react in any other way, and I was the same. I think the violence and just the targeting of a very specific community, you know, and just things like gun violence, we just don't, thankfully, see that much here. So I guess that part of it was part of it.
And then you got the amazing, that beautiful man, Fareed Ahmed, who, and he wants forgiveness.
That's incredible,
and he's really advocating for that, and I just... What an incredible person.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
It was amazing to see the conversations happening afterwards and the support and love, but then at the same time, now a year later, and I kind of briefly look at this in the book, it was quite shocking to see that some people still kind of reverted back to, are we not over this? Or, you know, like they just completely forgot what had actually happened and the magnitude of it. And that was quite shocking that it's just kind of like brush under the carpet again. And you're like, that can't happen. That,
compartmentalizing.
And I would have hoped that it would change things for everyone, but it does seem as though there was a core of people that, can we be done with this, you know, whereas I sort of think we can never be done with it.
Exactly, yeah, you know, and you really get to see the scope of the human psyche, I guess, and that.
Yes. Yeah,
this is true. One way that you you dealt with that and tried to help present different views of the Muslim community was to direct a series of short documentaries about Muslim New Zealanders for Radio New Zealand called This Is Us. And for our listeners, I highly, highly recommend that you check these out. They're absolutely beautifully done. Six documentaries.
And around 2-3 minutes each. Thank you. Yeah, I mean, part of the beauty was my cinematographer Kelly Chen, who's amazing. It was an all-woman crew, which was really fun.
We noticed that. Yeah. We loved that.
It was good fun. And it was a very small crew. And we had our executive producer was Shuchi Kothari, who came up with the initial premise and encouraged me to apply. So having her kind of mentor the process and the ideas was great because she's done something similar previously. And then I had a really good researcher, Sarah Shirazi, who's part Iranian herself. And so she was my lead researcher. She went out and tried to find and did find a lot of amazing people. And unfortunately, we had to keep it to Auckland and Waikato due to budget. But originally, we wanted to go all around the country. Maybe in the future that
could be another series, right? Yeah, I was really impressed with the different stories that we got. And, you know, from so many different people who'd come from so many different countries, so many different backgrounds.
It was really cool to meet people and just, and learn more about them and to be invited into their world and their and their life was quite a privilege.
Yeah, I must admit I learnt so much from Radio New Zealand around the anniversary time. I think they did a wonderful job. So many stories, and yeah, it was really something.
Yeah,
I'm very grateful for that.
I agree. They had the virtual reality flower living wall.
That's right.
And then a podcast and photography series about the widows of Shaheed who got to go to Mecca from, I think it was the gift from the king. No, I don't know. It was a gift from Saudi Arabia for them to be able to go visit Mecca. So this crew followed them, which was really, really good to see. And it was really great to have the support of Radio New Zealand, not just for the stories, but the people telling the stories. They're really keen to get people from that community or, you know, people who are passionate about that community to tell these stories, which was really good of them.
No, at least it's wonderful if something positive can come out of something so awful, isn't it? Yeah, and speaking of awfulness, there's a really powerful page in the book, and it just, I was gobsmacked when I read it, but the way you did it I thought was so powerful. And you just list, and I think it's about 19 or 20 terror attacks that worldwide on the Muslim community that happened in the same year. So they were just after March.
They weren't all on the Muslim community. It was just terror attacks in general.
Oh, okay.
But, I mean, there were also, you know, the ones in America and in Europe, but also places like Somalia and Pakistan, which sadly are a daily occurrence. So there were actually a lot more in those places, but I just didn't add them because it's just quite...
Right.
I mean, it was just shocking to have that. But thank you. Yeah, I didn't really... I think I just left it as a list because I just didn't know what to say. It was
And I liked
very powerful
how you did that.
I mean, just
there was no
the
comment.
Dates, you know, one a week, one every 2 weeks, and then to hear you say that there actually were so many
more
that not even on our radar here in New
Zealand. Yeah, I mean, one good thing about the coronavirus was when I kept checking back, there weren't any, which was quite nice to see.
Right.
There
wasn't
any. Everyone locked down there.
But it was, I mean, I shouldn't laugh about it, but it was shocking, that just within a year you still get that many horrific attacks around the world. So
yes. Oh, Yeah, but that was so powerful. You also talk about, this was really interesting too, about some of the popular culture films that we've known quite well, but how problematic they are. So things like the Indiana Jones films and, you know, with the sort of white saviour, I'm waving my hands around. And then equally so the one with Sally Field and it, Not Without My Daughter from the early 90s. And it's almost like... gee, I hope this is changing, but it's almost like people from the Middle East are portrayed as in a very one-dimensional way, aren't they?
Yeah, sometimes. And that, especially in the 80s and 90s, I think, was quite prominent. And then they've moved, I think, now onto Russians. So it's just this constant stereotyping of people as the baddies, where, you know, where the American hero is the American hero.
Yes.
And it's you know, partly a reflection of the times. So with Not Without My Daughter, it was just after the Gulf, well, during the Gulf War, and it was during this really hateful time in America. There was a lot of anti-Iranian resentment due to the hostage situation a few years prior. But I think also it was just, you know, it was Alfred Molina, for example, playing
the
Persian. Yeah. And as good as he is, it was quite problematic. And just the whole thing was very anti-Muslim as well. It was very... it was just very much showing Iranians a really bad light. And this kind of occurred again a little bit in Ben Affleck's Argo. And I think part of the problem is that just it's just what people have seen previously, and so they just assume this is how it is. And that's the harm of stereotypes, I think. Negative stereotypes in particular. And so I think that's why it's important to have representation. And, you know, as a writer or in behind the scenes, it's just as important as on screen. And
Absolutely.
I think I keep banging on about it, but I think that's for me where it comes from, is seeing these images and these harmful narratives constantly through my youth and getting angry with it and thinking, okay, we need to start making changes. And I think we are. I think we are definitely starting to make changes, and even Hollywood is starting to do it, which is fantastic, because Hollywood is the global cinema.
Yeah.
It does have an influence on what we see and sometimes even think.
Yeah.
Did I read recently that the Oscars have just put in an inclusion policy in relation to the Best Picture category?
Yeah, and I know a lot of people have issues with that, but I think that's great.
I haven't read into it yet, but it sounds interesting.
Yeah.
No, you know, in 82 years, it's about time.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
And because even as you were saying about Alfred Molina playing a Persian man, Hollywood still can't do that properly. Like, they'll never have a gay man play a gay man. You know, they can't even do that. It always has to be some, you know,
someone
good-looking, straight, white, cis man that everyone knows. You know, it just...
Yeah.
And that own voice and own experience.
Yeah. Or just go to something different. Like, I read recently Idris Elba was in the running for James Bond.
Oh, yes.
But it was Ian Fleming, right, who he said he was too street.
Wow.
In quotation marks.
Wow.
Which I'll leave it up to our listeners to, to take from that. But, yeah, so, again, we do have a way to go, but I'm glad things are changing. I can see it in the New Zealand industry from a personal experience. I've been working on Shortland Street as just a minor character, as a detective. Shameless plug. But, you know, there's been a few scenes where it's all just people of colour in that one scene, which has been fantastic.
Yeah.
And they're really pushing for that, which is really good to see.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Oh, go Shortland Street.
Yeah.
Yes. Now, I do want to say before we go that I want to mention that the Ghazale is going to be appearing at a couple of festivals coming up. So you've got Word in Christchurch,
yes,
29th of October through to the 1st of November.
Yes.
And then you'll be at Verb in Wellington between the 6th and 8th of November. So to our listeners, get along if you can. And
online as well, right? Some of them?
I'm not sure.
I think there might be online.
Yeah. Oh, great. Yeah, but it'll be exciting.
Yeah, good luck.
It's a lot of local authors, yeah.
Right. Yeah, they'll be fantastic, actually. And this book is such a valuable addition to our cultural conversation that we're having at the moment. So I really want to thank you for having the courage to write it. Thank you so much. And thanks for being here with us. We really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me. This was lovely. Thank you so much.
It's been great. And thanks, listeners. Until next time, happy reading. Haere rā, ka kite anō.
This program was brought to you by Auckland Libraries. Find us online at aucklandlibraries.govt.nz and catch the program next Sunday at 9:35 p.m. on 104.6 FM or anytime online at planetaudio.org.nz/booksandbeyond. Every day, every day.